In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Part two of our coverage of Wizard World Chicago is coming up. Live from the convention floor, you're going to hear from some great creators and editors and writers. A lot of interviews that are going to be covering the spectrum of what's going on today in not only the mainstream but independent books as well. We're going to be talking with Bill Roseman and Mike Perkins of Marvel Comics. Bill is editing a score of titles, among them one book that Mike is drawing, the new adaptation of Stephen King's The Stand. That's going to be starting off in the fall, and they're going to give you the lowdown on that. Then we check in with Jeff Darrow, and it's great that Jeff consented for a quick second interview with Word Balloon. Gotten so many positive comments about his first interview, but we talk about his work on Speed Racer, and not only are we talking about Shaolin Cowboy, his comic book for Burly Man Comics, but the Shaolin Cowboy movie that is in pre-production, slated for a 2010 release, and Jeff's the director of that, so a nice conversation with Jeff. But that's not all. Andy Parks will be talking to us. He's been doing the Daredevil annuals with Ed Brubaker for the last couple years at Marvel. He talks about that and some other upcoming writing projects in the future. Then we'll talk to Ryan Bodenheim, who with Jonathan Hickman has created another very interesting Image miniseries called Red Mass from Mars. Jonathan made the headlines this weekend at Wizard with the announcement that he'll be co-writing Nick Fury's Secret Invasion with Brian Bendis. But this science fiction series is pretty cool, and Ryan's going to talk about that. Andy Owens, the fine artist of Dark Horse Comics in DC, talks about his work on Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8 and his work with Scott McDaniel on Trinity. And he and Andy are doing the backup series for that DC Weekly. Johnny Nitz will be talking about his new take on the DC Comics Western hero El Diablo. Don Kramer updates us on Nightwing, including the long-awaited showdown between Dick Grayson and Harvey Dent, Two-Face himself. And we wrap things up with Phil Hester, who will be talking about his Top Cow work on The Darkness and his art chores on Johnny Nitz's El Diablo. And stick around, because the show doesn't end then. We got two other extra interviews, not from Wizard Chicago, but of recent vintage and in a convention setting. I'll give you the setup on those when we get to that point at the show. But right now, let's go back to Saturday morning when I spoke to Bill Roseman and Mike Perkins at the Marvel booth.
Here on the floor at Wizard World Chicago, and I've got Bill Roseman and Mike Perkins here. And, of course, you know Mike's fine artwork on things like Captain America, House of M, Avengers. He told me last night that he's going to start work on Stephen King's at The Stand, the adaptation. And now I'm blanking. Who's writing the book?
I never know how to say Roberto Aguirre.
Say it.
I don't know if it's Aguirre or Aguirre.
Oh, I say Aguirre. Roberto, he had a great run. There was a book called Marvel Knights 4, and then he had a really great run on Spectacular Spider-Man. I think it was Spectacular Spider-Man. What Roberto is so good at, he comes from a background of drama and theater, and now he's writing for the HBO show Big Love.
Oh, that's great.
So what he has is a great sense of dramatic timing and characters and emotions and really knowing how to divide up the scene so that when his scripts come in, he's so good at getting a chunk of the book and deciding, okay, here's how much can be told in 22 pages, and then also here's what's on each page. So Roberto is so good at delivering the drama and the humor and the emotions that are at the heart of the characters in The Stand.
I think as a dramatist himself, he knows his way around an adaptation.
Right.
Excellent. I want to back in and introduce Bill Roseman, and mention the fact that Bill is editing not only The Stand, but also a lot of the Marvel Space books right now, all the books that came out of the Annihilation miniseries, like Guardians of the Galaxy, Nova, and I'll let you roll off a few more.
Hey there, true believers. That's right. Your man at Marvel is back in the House of Ideas. I got the call from Joe Quesada and Tom Brevoort about 2 years ago, and I'm back, and now I'm on the editorial side of the desk. Having a great time, and I get to work on heroes that I grew up reading and work with creators that I grew up reading their stuff. So it's great. I get to concentrate mostly on the Marvel Heroes books. I just inherited She-Hulk a couple months ago. We have a great new artistic team starting next month. It's a Secret Invasion tie-in, and there's an artist from an Italian studio called GG Studios,
right?
Vincenzo. Yes.
Vincenzo Strucca.
Yes. He was who used to work at Crossgen.
Used to work at Crossgen, yeah.
And, Vincenzo is on the book, and it has a great, almost like it's an animated look. It's almost like a She-Hulk cartoon for adults.
Oh, that's great.
It's got a great look, great energy to it. So I'm working on She-Hulk. I just inherited Thunderbolts. I just inherited Iron Man, Director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Very cool.
As you said, Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy, which came out of Conquest, I edited. And The Stand, which is a dream come true. I'm a longtime Stephen King reader. And
the dream come true is working with me.
I was going to say, I was lucky enough to have met Mike years ago, and we have formed a wonderful friendship, so it's great to be working together on something we care passionately about. And it looks beautiful. Mike's character sketches came in, and the pages came in, and he just nails what the characters look like. In fact, when Mike turned in one character sketch for a character named Franny, we showed it to Stephen, and he said that's how he always pictured that character.
Oh, that's great.
So yeah, it's been very rewarding so far, and The Stand comes out in October, and it's going to be fantastic.
Well, that's wonderful.
September.
Oh, okay, even better, because The Dark Tower obviously has been well-received not only by comic fans, but Stephen King fans, and I'm sure The Stand will be no exception.
That's right. The first issue of The Stand is going to come out with the first issue of the next Dark Tower series, so it's going to be a 1-2 Stephen King punch.
Wow. Now, how many, is there going to be a 6-issue arc, or how long will it take to adapt The Stand?
The plan now is to do 6 5-issue miniseries.
Wow.
So for a total of 30 issues. I know, we're in it for the long haul.
Sure.
We began with the complete and unabridged version of The Stand. It's over 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
And we want to deliver as much as possible. So Marvel was smart and said, hey, let's not just try and make 12 issues. Let's really give it the space and the room it needs. So Mike will be in the world of The Stand for many days to come.
2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. You know, you think back when we were all kids and the classic illustrators that would come out of those classic novels, and it's neat to see that a modern classic,
right,
you know, a guy like Stephen King, can get, you know, the length that is necessary to truly adapt the story. So that's wonderful.
Right, right.
Yeah,
right.
Terrific, man. And, you know, Mike, I always tell you, I've been loving what you've been doing with Cap, with Steve Epting. And it's been, you know, it's a wonderful series. I tell Brubaker that all the time, you know, how great it is.
I'm sure he really needs to hear it again.
Well, and the great thing, too, is, God, Cap's been gone for, you know, 2 years now, and it's amazing how the book still is, it's still a Captain America book, and everyone still talks about him.
Right.
It's that wonderful plot device of a character being so important, even when he's off stage.
Yeah, like I said, Cap's so big enough that even the removing, him not being there, it is a story. And also, they developed the supporting cast so well. I want to read about Falcon and Agent 13 and the Winter Soldier. I can't wait to get, you know, the latest on what's happening to them. So, you know, it's a great run.
And on, I should ask Iron Man, Director of S.H.I.E.L.D., you told me that after the Stuart Moore story, you got a Christos Gage arc coming up.
That's right. Right off of Stuart's story, which is really fun. It's a post-Secret Invasion story where you see two faces from Tony's past come back and intersect to haunt him. Wow, with some wonderful art by Roberto De La Torre.
Very cool.
Then the next arc is a Secret Invasion arc. It's written by Christos Gage, one of my favorite writers at Marvel, who's really come on strong the last year. He's a guy who can look at Marvel history, what we call continuity, and he uses it not as a crutch or a wall in front of him, but he uses it to propel the story forward. He has great respect for history, but he can mix it up and use it to drive the story forward. So this story is where, as we know in Secret Invasion, Tony Stark has gone down. He has this Skrull infection inside of him. And you find out that, you know, Tony Stark is a smart guy. He's going to have a backup plan. And his backup plan is named War Machine.
Very cool.
So James Rhodes, who has been appearing lately in Initiative, now steps to the forefront. And this three-part story really shows him and shows the next stage of his journey as a character. And we have great art by Sean Chen, who used to draw Iron Man years ago,
yes,
and he's back. So we're just, you know, we're lucky to have a great creative team. And this really is, I can't reveal what's coming down the pike, but this is the first step in the next chapter of War Machine's life. And I'll leave it at that.
That's excellent. Chris has been indispensable. I know he's come in on a lot of these events and written special tie-in arcs and already proved himself during World War Hulk, I think, with a great Iron Man arc. So, you know, I know he loves the character, and I'm looking forward to that.
He wrote the House of M Avengers at the
time. Absolutely.
Union Jack.
Union Jack, exactly. You guys are a great team.
Yeah, we really enjoy working together. it's going to be a while until we get a chance again, but, right. You know, any chance I get.
So Mike, there's a mini team up because Mike is drawing covers to House of M Civil War, which is a new House of M miniseries that's coming up. It's going to be 5 issues, written by Christos, drawn by Andrea DeVito, who drew The First Annihilation.
Yes.
And we wanted to, we couldn't have a House of M party without Mike Perkins, so Mike has graciously agreed to do the covers for each issue.
That's interesting. Two events converging in this story, House of M and House of M and Civil War.
Well, I mean, the Civil War is more in reference to the Civil War that went on within the House of M universe,
okay,
with
right.
Magneto and the mutants and the humans. So it's more of that kind of...
I see.
This story tells how did Magneto rise to power? When we began the House of M saga, he was just in power, in charge of the government with his House of M. And we said, well, hey, how did that exactly happen? So again, we're taking a good 5 issues to really show that story. How did Magneto go from young boy in a concentration camp? How did his life change during the House of M reality? And how exactly did he form the House of M and take over the world? So it's another, like House of M Avengers, it's another unrevealed story that we're revealing for the first time. And the response has been great. It did very well, and we're getting great news about the collection. The House of M Avengers just came out in a soft cover collection.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
And
I didn't know that.
It just came out.
Mike's going to have to get his copy.
Actually, I think it comes out this week.
Right.
And the response has been really great. And so on to the next one.
That's great, guys. You know, and I'm glad to hear it. Now, wow, the three of you, that's kind of a mini cross-gen reunion between Andrea and you two guys.
Right. Well, and Laura as well.
He's right there.
It.
Oh, wow. Okay, there you go, man.
What's fun is you look up and down, you open up a lot of those cross-gen comics, and you'll see a lot of names that are here at Marvel now.
Oh, yeah.
Steve McNiven, Paul Pelletier, Steve Epting, Butch Geis, Frank D'Armada, Laura Martin,
Andrea
DeVito. It's just great that Marvel reached out to everybody and offered them an opportunity.
And
Jim Chung.
That's right, the great Jim Chung.
That's
absolutely
right. So everyone, you know, they offered the hand, and everyone stepped up to the plate. And it's been a real great resurgence of all these creators here at Marvel, and everyone's doing great.
That's wonderful, guys. Good luck with the stand and all the other projects you got coming. I know I'll be talking to you guys down the line a little bit more, but it's always a pleasure to see Mike. And Bill, I'm glad to finally meet you.
John, it was my pleasure to meet you. I just want to thank you for this, and I want to thank all the Word Balloon fans out there.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Back on the floor of Wizard World Chicago and talking with one of the great local Chicago artists who... does wonderful work not only in comics but also for the screen. It's our pal Jeff Darrow, who is always hesitant to talk, but I convinced him to talk for just a couple minutes, and it's good to see you, man.
Yeah, but you can't actually see me. This is on a radio. Right?
But I see.
Okay.
Tell me, now I know you spent a lot of time in Germany with the Wachowskis working on Speed Racer.
Actually, no. I did all...
Just in L.A.?
Yeah, no, I was in L.A., and I started it in Chicago because, well, they live here, and then I went to L.A. for... about 4 months, and I worked on it right up until they took off to Germany. So
Tony Akins was telling me, and I haven't seen it on IMAX, and says it really is an experience seeing the film on the IMAX screen. I don't know if you've had that opportunity.
Yeah, I have seen it on IMAX, but I mean, I've been told that the brothers have told me that they prefer you see it actually, because it's a digital movie, and when it's on IMAX, they have to take the digital and turn it into film. And to do that, it's like one generation down. But I have seen it on IMAX. I thought it looked great. And this June 29th in Tokyo, at the Tokyo Dome, the baseball stadium, they're going to have the very first screening of an IMAX film in Japan of Speed Racer.
Wow.
The biggest IMAX screen ever built for 32,000 people.
That's awesome. That's really cool. You know, that's the thing I think... I've read this online from critics who have said, you know, despite, you know, some reviews on both sides for the film, that years from now, this is going to be looked at a real technical achievement as far as filmmaking.
I think it is. I don't care what anybody is. You know, if you like the movie, there's nothing else like it out there. There's nothing. I mean, they always try to do something different, and they get beat over the head for it, and I think people are unfair to them. I mean, I think they get attacked personally for... you know, whatever reasons or whatever problems people have themselves. I thought that of all the movies out there, there's nothing like it. And I my hat's off them for trying to do something completely different. And I mean, I've heard people say that it was like Tron, and I don't know where they get that, because I mean, I didn't try like Tron, but it's prehistoric. I mean,
sure.
But you know, they always have to find something to, you know, they have to compare it to something, you know. And, you know, Pippi Longstocking. It's like Pippi Longstocking, only it's an alien movie. Yeah, but it reminds me of Pippi Longstocking. Well, why? Well, there's blood. Blood's red, and Pippi's hair was red, and that's all it does. I mean, there's critics. I mean, I think there aren't that many very good film critics anymore. Anyway, they're kids that they can't write fiction, and they can't, you know, they're jealous of. And the other thing is the brothers don't play the PR game. And I think a lot of critics think that whatever success they've had, they kind of owe it to them. And the fact that they don't, I think that they meet them on the head with it. Because I mean, they're just very shy. They just don't. They're not pretentious. They don't want to. They just don't like, you know. They don't like to talk about themselves. They don't want to convince someone. You know, that, I mean, there's so many guys that like to go out there and talk about, I was thinking of, Dionysian period when I decided to have that scene where the bullet enters Angelina Jolie's left breast. And that's it's my Oedipal influences, blah, blah, blah.
What do you think? I noticed that wanted like some other films that are kind of have a Matrix certainly feel to them.
Yeah, Wanted looks. I mean, even with the trailer, it looks like the Matrix. I mean, even the story. Some guy working in an office, and he's the one. He's the chosen one.
Have you read the Miller comic book?
Actually, no. So maybe, but I've heard things changing. I heard the comic was really good.
It is very good.
But that's Hollywood. You know, they'll take it. Like, oh, we really love this thing. We love to change it. And then they do something completely different. I'm sure they probably butchered this thing.
Are Larry and Andy already working on their next project? Or
yeah, they're over in Germany. They finish up today. Their second unit producing a movie called Ninja Assassin, which is the most violent film they've ever made, and it's a modern day ninja. It's about a ninja hunting down other ninjas. And it's action packed. It's gonna be great, and it's directed by James McTeague.
Oh, great!
And they're just doing second unit, and keeping an eye on stuff.
What parts of Speed Racer did you work on? I mean, or how would you quantify your work that you did for the film?
If you want to see, actually, the first time in a movie, I've actually seen my drawings. There's a sequence in it where the kid is watching television, and he's watching this Japanese anime, and I did all the drawings in that.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, and it's a sort of takeoff on Fist of the North Star.
Very cool.
Where the main character's name is Tim, and I did that. I did a lot of the stuff in the sequence where they're in the factory, they're in this car factory, and I did a lot of the actual factory. You see, okay. The assembly plant. I did a lot of these tests. They show them tested racers, and I did a lot of that stuff. And I storyboarded this race in the desert. A lot of, you'll see some weird stuff in there, and I did that. And my daughter, my daughter worked on the film.
Oh, that's terrific.
She did there's a sequence for Speed as a kid, and he's fantasizing about being a racer, and she did all the drawings.
Well, that's really cool.
She gets a credit. She gets credit over me.
How old is your daughter?
10 years old.
That's excellent.
Yeah, she was pretty excited. She got to go to the premiere, and she got to meet, got to meet all the stars. She hung out with Christina Ricci, who was really nice to her.
Oh, that's really cool.
And Emil was real nice to her, and John Goodman was very sweet to her. They're all... I got to meet the monkey, though.
Chim Chim.
Chim Chim gave me a high five. I always wanted to touch a monkey. Now Petta's probably going to have me killed. The monkey was well treated, you know? I mean...
He had his own trailer?
He did. He had his own gymnasium. They treated the monkey... There were more people looking after that kid's welfare than were looking after the monkey's welfare than were that kid.
The kid who played Spiral.
Seriously, yeah.
We got Shaolin Cowboy. You two were telling me you're up to issue 8, and the first story is still going on.
That's true.
Do you have a set ending, or is this...
Oh, yeah. he kills a bunch of guys, and then he, you know, either gets killed or he doesn't get killed. That's the ending.
Very cool. And more story arcs planned. Are we going to see any of the fake covers of the I mean, are we going to see any of those stories ever realized?
Maybe. But it's going to be a while because I'm working on Shaolin Cowboy the movie.
Great. Yes, I wanted to ask about that. Are you directing that?
Yes, I've written it and I'm going to direct it. So we'll see.
Where's the project standing on that?
It's in pre-production. We start in August in Japan.
Wow.
So we'll see.
Well, good luck with that. And who's playing the cowboy?
It's a big animated thing.
It is animated. Okay, yeah. That's fantastic.
The Chowskis and the Weinsteins are producing it in America, and we're doing it in Japan with a studio called Madhouse, which has just done that Batman Dark Knight thing.
Very
good. They did the Animatrix, and they wanted to do another feature, so the brothers wanted to do the Shaolin Cowboy, and they asked me if I wanted to write it and direct it. I said, do you think I can? And they said, yeah, you can do it. It'd be awesome. Okay, so we'll see.
I was going to ask, how different is that from the work that you have done with animation?
I don't know. I haven't, you know, it's frustrating. It's a lot of work.
Okay. But you're happy with the script and you're happy with kind of, you know, where things are?
I can say I'm happy with the script. I mean, it doesn't mean anything because, I mean, I might like it and you go, what's that piece of crap? But I think it's funny, I think. I mean, people that have read it have told me that they think it's funny. I mean, they think it's weird.
That's good.
But, you know, I mean, even the Weinsteins are kind of like, well. I mean, it's not any weirder than, you know, it's a kung fu movie.
Sure.
Zombies and talking crabs and a lot of crabs in this one. But it's not the comic, it's a whole new story.
Oh, that's okay. I was going to ask. All right, that's cool.
Everybody wanted the crab in the movie, so the crab's in the movie.
How long is it going to take? Because, I mean, I was going to say animation, I know it takes a lot longer.
2010.
Wow. Well, that's great, man. That's excellent. Well, that'll give us enough of a cushion to, before I bother you again, because I know that you're always hesitant to interview, but I always appreciate that you do tolerate my requests.
And I just sound so stupid that, you know, my reputation's already crap, and I made it even worse.
Not at all, man. People always want to know updates and know how you're doing, and we're thrilled when they did hear about the Shaolin Cowboy movie.
Action back.
Well, we're looking forward to it, and I think, you know, you're certainly going to bring your comic book fans, and I think there's enough animation fans that will appreciate that kind of genre.
Well, I hope so.
I think so. Well, Jeff, thanks a lot for your time, and it was good talking to you and catching up, and I'll bug you again in 2010 when it's closer to the movie.
Get out there to know that I changed my underwear today and my socks. So those of you who come to see me at Wizard World today, I am hygienically clean.
And sitting downwind from him, I can appreciate that, so we thank you for your hygiene.
That's what I do it for.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, bye.
It's Andy Parks, everybody, here in Artist Alley, because I like him, and I like his writing. And yeah, he's a good anchor. He works with Phil Hester, but we like the writer Andy Parks. We like the and of course he's always wearing a sharp hat, as Clay Moore just mentioned to me. You know, with the Union Station Andy Parks, the Capote in Kansas Andy Parks, and lately the Daredevil Annual Andy Parks, which has been really cool. I like this combination of you and Drew Baker.
Thank you, sir. That was really kind of it to make happen. He liked Capote a lot, and we traded a few emails about that, and he just said, do you want to write a Daredevil thing? I said, I would love to. I don't have any desire to pitch 40 ideas and go through all that, because I got a lot of writing I can do if I can play in that playground without interrupting all the other stuff I want to do too much. That'd be awesome. And he said, great, I'll just plot it and you can write it. So it worked out really well. It was really fun to play in that world with, you know, Frank Miller was just the shit for me when I was when I was discovering comics in high school, and to play around in that world was really cool. So I did two of those, and now I'm behind hopelessly on all of my other writing stuff, so I gotta jump back and get on that.
Well, tell me about, can you talk about some of the things you're writing? What are you up to now?
The first thing to come out will be, I'm bringing back my character Uncle Slam to do this 40-page one-shot from Oni called Uncle Slam Fights Back. And it's kind of reflects my ridiculously liberal slanted worldview of how I feel like kind of like my country's gotten lost in the last decade or so. So I'm using Uncle Slam, sending him to the GOP convention to kind of poke fun at the right, talk about the themes that I want to discuss right now. You know, the GOP, in my eyes, using fear and religion to kind of get their way, and I want to poke fun at that. So that'll be out, I think, end of August or so, like right before the real GOP convention.
Okay, very nice.
And then two other things at ONI that are just slowly plodding along. Blood Red was announced a while ago, and we're still working on it.
Who's your artist for Uncle Slam?
It's a guy named TJ Kirsch, and to be honest, I don't know what else he's done. He was just a guy Image found and said, hey, what about this guy?
Okay.
And he's been doing a great job, and he's fast, so he's keeping me on my toes.
And who's drawing Blood Red?
That's Sean Crystal.
Okay.
Super talented Serpico Jesus, who teaches at SCAD in Atlanta. And that's looking killer. It's going to be a great book.
That's cool. What can you tell us about the plot of Blood Red?
Blood Red is a revenge story set on Mars in the future. And again, it reflects my liberal views about religion and intolerance. So that along with this straight revenge story, there are a lot of religious themes in it, and all set on Mars. I wanted to prove to people I could write a graphic novel that wasn't set in Kansas or Missouri. So I went far afield for once.
Well, I'm eventually waiting for that Orson Welles book that I know is percolating in your head, man.
Have we talked about it? Yeah, because I've got an idea to do like a triptych of OGMs about his career. And I know what time periods I'd like to cover and everything. But someday. I worry about his daughter, though. She's a pain in the ass. She sues everybody. So.
Jesus. And I was going to say, too, Andy, that I'm blanking now, but I have to think for a second. Of course, you're inking El Diablo, and I'll be talking to Phil and Giant Hits about that. So that's very cool. And like I always say, I'm always happy to, you know, see your art, but... you know, people need to discover that you're the writer Andy Parks. And if you guys haven't really checked out his other ONI books, like I said, Union Station, which is a wonderful gangster story set in the 1930s, and Capote in Kansas, which tells a different side of the Ink Hole Blood story.
Right.
And Chris Sami drew it, and it's a gorgeous book. And it was Eduardo Barreto who did Union Station.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really, these are great books, and you should definitely check them out. Andy's a hell of a writer, and I'm not just being nice because he's in front of me and can kick my ass, but. No. But no, dude, always happy to see you. And when it's time for either Uncle Slam or Blood Red, we'll do a full boat.
Excellent.
Good to see you, man.
Pleasure, John. Thanks.
Thanks, man. Still roaming the roads of Artist Alley, and now speaking with the artist from Red Mass for Mars, Ryan Bodenheim. Ryan, I spoke to Hickman on the phone yesterday, and I know he's very pleased with the book, and I've really enjoyed that first issue. For people who haven't had a chance to check out the story yet, can you give us a little capsule of what the story's about?
Yeah.
Here, let's wait for it. Okay.
It's essentially, when you boil it down, it's a Superman story, except instead of coming down in Kansas and being raised with morals from Ma and Pa Kent, he comes down in the Dark Ages, and he's pretty ruthless guy. But essentially, you flash forward, and we're in the future at that point, and there's a large threat coming to destroy the Earth, and Mars is the only one who can stop it. That's our main character. And he sort of refuses to. He's kind of stuck in his ways. So, you know, that's probably the simplest version of the story, but it's a Hickman book, so it's a lot more complicated than that.
Oh, yeah. How did you and John hook up?
Actually, he put an ad out for Artist, and I remembered him from Comic Book Idol. I remember loving his colors. I saw some of the nightly news after that, and I just sent him some samples, and... we pretty much got started right there. So.
Well, as you're pointing out, John has a very distinct look in his art, and I wonder how much influence he has on your design for the book.
You know, there was a few things we discussed for the look, but I think for the most part, you know, he's always just kind of let me off my leash. You know, he doesn't tie me down on what to do, keeps the scripts real loose. He's gonna have a hard time getting rid of me because, you know, it's working for another artist.
Sure.
And that's refreshing. You know, it just gives me enough freedom to really have fun. So I think it shows. So.
Well, John had a big announcement this weekend. He's going to be co-writing with Brian Bendis on Nick Fury's Secret Warriors. And I only hope that, you know, that announcement gives you guys more notoriety and stuff and brings more people to buying Red Mask from Mars and anything else you got coming up. Do you already have another project with Hickman cooking?
I do. It's we're still talking it over right now, though, and mashing out what we want it to be. I think we pretty much agreed we are going to do something next. So, like I said, he's going to have a hard time shaking me off, so it's just too much fun to work with him.
Well, issue one is out. Is issue two, has issue two for Red Mask come out yet?
No, issue one just came out. Issue two will come out in July, and it's just a four-part series, so after that it's all done, and it'll be collected in trade at some point. But it's a great story altogether.
Well, and it's early enough, folks, so you should be able to find issue one in your stores or get your store to order it for you. And like Brian just said, issue two is coming out in July. Nice four-issue series. Red Mask from Mars from Image. And we've been talking to Ryan Bodenheim. And thanks a lot, Ryan. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. It was fun.
It's Sunday in Artist Alley, and I have a moment now to speak with Andy Owens, the fine anchor of the work on Trinity. He's doing the backups with Scott McFarlane, and of course his marvelous work on Season 8 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer with George Jetsy. And Andy...
McDaniel, by the way.
Scott's doing...
You said McFarlane.
Oh, did I really?
Yeah.
Man, it is Sunday. It is Scott McDaniel. I'm so sorry. Sorry, Scott. But that's okay. I'm talking to Andy. First, let's talk about Buffy, because... And it's funny. We talked last year here at Wizard Chicago as well. And the series just keeps getting better. And the great thing is the enthusiasm from not just Joss, who's doing a wonderful job when he writes, but really Drew Goddard, wonderful story. Brian K. Vaughan, wonderful story. And that's got to be gratifying as artists to get great scripts and really be able to bring these characters to life.
It is nice. One of the great things is reading the scripts before we start, and I can hear the voices of the actors just in the words. I mean, they know them, you know, they've got them down dead.
Did you work on the earlier Dark Horse versions of Buffy as well?
Yeah, I did, and it wasn't the same. Like,
it isn't.
The scripts, they weren't as good, and you didn't hear the voices of the characters. They were just, you know, decent little stories, but
sure.
This, there's something special to this, and every script that comes in, you can feel it. It's well-written. It's got... Joss is overseeing it like a producer, and so he's got his main story mapped out, and he picks great guys to come in and do his story arcs, or do their story arcs, technically. The Brian K. Vaughan stuff, I thought that the overall story caught me better than the Joss or the Drew stuff.
Well, let's talk about actually Drew's story, because it just wrapped up. That was fantastic, and you're right. I mean, those moments between Xander and Dracula were hilarious, as good as they were in the single episode. And that's the other great thing. I mean, think about it. It was one idea in a single Buffy episode, and you were able to expand on that idea for, you know, six issues and really flesh these characters out and the relationships as well.
Right, and just like the little moments of humor that you get in a TV show, like Andrew. He's one of my favorite characters. The guy just, even reading him cracks me up. And Josh said that he takes pride in knowing that the actor who played Andrew is probably sitting in his apartment reading the comic book out loud and doing all the, you know, the acting, yeah, by himself, and that cracks me up too. But like that character, I'm so glad he's still in it, because he kills me, he slays me. No pun intended. But
how's Trinity for you and Scott?
Trinity's good. We're just getting started, so it's a little different. Like the first couple issues were all about the villains and stuff. So, you know, as we're getting to know the characters, Morgan Le Fay and Despero, now we're getting into it. We're getting Nightwing and Robin and Hawkman. That's the fun stuff. You know, the heroes fighting, the villains talking. It's a great setup. But when you're trying to get into a book, you want the action. And now we're really getting into that. So it's starting to get really fun.
So is that your schedule basically now, Trinity and Buffy?
Yeah, Scott McDaniel. We have one issue left of a six-issue Batman Confidential arc that we're doing. We've been trying to do that in and around other stuff for the past year, and that's a really good story. I think I talked about it last year. It's the first time he captures the Joker, and the Joker wreaks havoc on Gotham Central, basically, because they have no idea what they're dealing with, and you know, all of a sudden he's dropped in their lap, and he just destroys one cop's life, and it's a really good story. That's written by, I could be wrong, I believe it's Andrew Kreisberg. He writes Eli Stone. it's probably the best Batman story I've worked on since, I mean, I've worked on quite a few Batman projects throughout the last 5 or 6 years, and it's the one that Scott and I are the most excited about. It's a good story from start to finish, but they keep pulling us off, so it's taken us forever to get it done, but they've started soliciting it, so they're going to have to give us that time to get that last issue done, but it's just about there.
Well, that's great, man. Well, we look forward to that. More of Trinity, and of course, more Buffy, man. You guys are doing a great job, and it's always good to see Andy, and we got to hang out a little bit on Thursday night, which was a blast, and happy to see you at the con, and hope to see you on the con trail as the year continues. So thanks for talking.
No, thanks for talking to me.
All right, let's have a quick moment with half of the team of the new El Diablo series that's coming soon. Is he coming from Vertigo or from DC proper?
DCU.
There we go. We're talking to Jai Nitz, the writer of the El Diablo update. And there was a recent one. Was it Azzarello that did an El Diablo daily?
Yes, in 2001, Brian Azzarello and Daniel Zazel. I got a funky name and I can't say the guy's name. They did a Vertigo book. It was 4 issues long. It was a Western set in 1870, using the original Lazarus Lane character as like a spook story for the West. It was not about Lazarus. It was not about his character. It was not about anything that went on without. It was a revenge, blood and guts story set in the Old West that El Diablo was a part of.
Okay.
A dynamite thing. And I'm going to rip it all off.
No, Todd, what can you tell us about your version of El Diablo?
The new El Diablo that I'm doing is set in the modern day. It's set in 2008. It's a brand new character that meets Lazarus Lane. And Lazarus Lane is still alive. He's 170 years old. And no, I don't explain it because I don't have to, because there's a guy from Krypton flying around our planet in this universe. So it's a modern day book where a new El Diablo is born from the fire of the old El Diablo. And it's everything about the legacy characters that we all know, like Starman and, you know, and Star and Stripe. It's, you know, born from fire and what happens. But in my version, it's all very, very violent. I wanted to make a Hispanic character that would be like a Hispanic that I would be related to, like one of my cousins or one of my mis tías or mis tíos, somebody that I know, and that's what I wanted to have done. So when I pitched it to DC, they were very, very enthusiastic about it. They liked it. They knew it was different. They knew it was going to be something that would not be like the regular comics that were out. So when we put it all together, it turned into an action comic with revenge and blood and betrayal and a new beginning and the consequences. Everything was on the line, and his character really might not survive at the end of this arc, that the other people in the story might not survive at the end of the arc, that it could all just be washed away because of the violent nature of the world that they're in. And it's something that I think everybody who picks up the book, when they see an issue of it, they're going to say, I don't know what's going to happen next, because that's the nature of the pitch and the nature of what's going on with this new character.
Sounds good, man. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to talk to Phil Hester a little bit more about it in a couple of minutes. And when it's closer to release time, we can do a full boat word balloon, Jai, and talk about that, talk about Paper Museum, and what else is coming up for you, man.
El Diablo should be at the first week of September.
Okay.
So the week of Labor Day, so that means comics don't ship on Wednesday. They'll be out on Thursday. So on Thursday when they come out, that is when El Diablo will come out. And we're going to be doing store signings and promotion, and because Dylan and Andy and I all know each other and live near each other, and we're just going to pimp this as well as we can. And so anybody that wants to check us out, we'll do more interviews, we'll do a full talk about it, and get everything, all the word out on it. I can't wait. It's great meeting you.
I know. Yeah. Pleasure, man. Absolutely.
It's great. Everybody knows you. They're like, you're talking about, and then they're like, oh, you know sports. I'm like, a guy that knows sports and comics, and I'm like, and then I'll say, hey, do you know about that? And then they're like, no, you got to meet this guy. So I'm glad I met you.
Likewise, man. Well, thanks a lot, and we'll talk later in the summer.
Excellent.
Thanks, Jai Nitz.
You hear?
I'm here in the DC booth with Don Kramer, who's doing a wonderful job on Nightwing when Rags Morales isn't doing a great job on Nightwing.
Yep, we're kind of splitting the job right now. Both of us are, you know, working at our pace right now and doing the best we can, and having a good time on it right now. Big issue, Nightwing 150 coming up. It's going to be big, and I guess a lot of guest stars in there too. I think that JSA is coming into it, and I'm not entirely sure about who everyone's coming in. because I haven't got the script yet, though, but he had kind of made mention that it's going to be the JSA, and I think Superman, and maybe even some of the Justice League, even so. So I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be very cool.
You know, and I...
Major Two-Face story, too. Major Two-Face story.
That's what I'm looking forward to, man, and you told me about that on Thursday night, and I think a lot of Nightwing fans have been kind of waiting for that confrontation, and it's built into the Batman mythos, and I think it's a long time coming, so it's great that you guys are finally getting a chance to tell that story, Pete and you guys.
Yeah, oh yeah, and Two-Face is probably my favorite Bat villain, you know,
really?
So I really, really enjoyed, you know, getting the chance to work with him again, though, and it's a lot of fun, though, so yeah, and not to mention, I've always loved his, like, a gritty urban story, and this is bringing back, I mean, it's a really hard-hitting story with Two-Face and Nightwing, so I'm liking it a lot.
Excellent.
I've been telling a lot of people about it, so.
Cool. John, I owe you a long word balloon, and I keep saying that, but I promise you that we got to do this. When does the Two-Face story start?
I think it's in August, I think is when it actually begins.
There you go. Yeah. All right, well, when the Bears are bugging you during training camp down in Bourbonnais,
yep.
I'll take you away from the football activity, and we'll sit down and we'll do a real one, all right?
Promises, yeah, right.
Exactly, and I don't blame you, man. I know you'll believe it when you see it, but it will happen, so.
Sure. You got my email.
I do indeed, man, and then it was good seeing you this weekend, man.
It's good to see you too, John. Take care.
You know, literally, I'm sitting on a flatbed with Phil Hester, and it's more my weight than Phil's, but honestly, I think sitting back here, we're almost popping a wheelie, which suggests that the truck really likes us, isn't it?
Yes, we are gentlemen of larger carriage.
It's good to see you, man, and I'm very happy that people are giving you more books to write. I loved the Daredevil Magdalene crossover. I thought that was wonderful from Top Cow.
Thank you very much. It was fun to do. When I was a kid, Frank Miller's Daredevil was a big influence on me, so I always felt like I wouldn't be a real cartoonist until I wrote and drew Daredevil, so that was an achievement of a lifelong dream for me.
Well, and I remember back to that issue of Daredevil that Brian had all the different art teams kind of do their sequences and stuff, and you and Andy did such a great job. And it's fun now, too, that Andy is getting his shot at Daredevil scripting for Brubaker.
Yeah, he's doing a great job, too, and Ed gives Andy a lot of room to play. And Andy's been putting in the hard work, and it's been paying off because those two one shots he did are well regarded, and I'm a big fan of him.
And speaking of Top Cow, I should also mention The Darkness, which I read issue 4 in the PDF and actually got a free copy from Philip earlier today. And interesting little turn of events where the dark female side of Jackie appears to be pregnant.
Yes, that's sort of my goal on the book is to have good cliffhangers every issue, you know, and that's as good as I can imagine. And it's actually a plot twist we cooked up before Firstborn. Believe it or not, that's how long this has been in the works, and they were kind of worried about, he's going to impregnate two girls at once, but it's really not a legitimate pregnancy. It's
yeah, traditional.
It's
pregnancy.
It's a construct made of his own powers, so it's sort of the darkness folded in on the darkness again, which if it ever gives birth, it will be something else. And you know, I'm not giving anything away. We're gonna have something given birth to. So
yeah, it's Carnage to Darkness's Venom, I suppose.
Yeah, pretty much, exactly. You know, it's like an even darker side of the darkness, and we'll explore exactly how Jackie will deal with that in the sixth issue. And it's gonna be pretty cataclysmic.
Tell me about now. I spoke to Jai earlier about El Diablo. Give us your end of the story and what you think of the upcoming story.
Well, it's a treat for me because ever since Swamp Thing, I've been wanting to get back to sort of a darker, you know, more edgy book. And El Diablo is going to occupy this perfect place that's between Vertigo and DCU. So it'll be this dark little corner of the DC universe where I can be edgy and dark and after Ant-Man. People assume that Andy and I should always be doing comedy books, you know, but our roots are really in the darker stuff, so it's fun to get back to it. And Jai's story is definitely darker than what you'd see in a normal DCU book, and it's just going to be a fun kind of roller coaster ride for everybody.
Let's talk about Firebreather. I saw Andy this weekend as well, and Firebreather is back.
Yeah, it's back as a monthly. We've been dying to do it ever since it went away, and it didn't really die, and you know, Image didn't kill it. It was just something that Andy couldn't afford to do anymore with his other assignments. But now he's got some free time, so we're back at it. And we'll have some big Fire Breather news in San Diego.
Cool.
Something I'm afraid I can't talk about now.
That's quite all right.
Yeah, we're committed to making it as close to monthly as possible. And Andy's really knocking it out of the park. It looks beautiful. And I also have another image book debuting in August called Golly, which is sort of a, with artist Brooke Turner, which is sort of a Southern fried horror thing. It's a horror comedy book. But, you know, like all my stuff, I'm trying to humanize it a little bit, give you a little bit more depth to it. And I think Golly will fill a hole in the current slew of comics that are out there now. It's something completely unique. And it's got a lot. It's probably got the most swearing of anything this side of the boys.
Well, that's cool. Well, and dude, I'm glad to have heard, because unfortunately I'm a geography idiot, that the terrible rains that happened
right
in Iowa didn't impact you guys too badly.
Not me directly. My little town's high and dry. But, you know, every town, you know, the towns I grew up in, the towns I went to college, the town I was born in, were all, you know, devastated.
Yeah.
It's tough to see. And you sort of know, you know, now you have a better feeling how the people in Katrina felt. With nothing like that. People had enough time to get away, and, you know, I think there was one fatality. So it's a miracle. But, yeah, it's still rough getting around there, and, you know, people will be cleaning up for a long time.
Well, on a happier note, we look forward to the Fire Breather news that's coming up in San Diego. The stuff you can't talk about gives us an excuse to do another full-blown word balloon pretty soon. And as always, man, I'm happy to see that, like I said, the writing continues and the art continues. And good books from Phil Hester, and always glad to talk about them. So good to see you, man.
Yeah, thanks for your time, John.
So that'll do it with the floor interviews from Wizard World Chicago, but the show's not over yet because I wanted to include this chunk of interviews that I did from the New York Comic Con back in April. They've been released in video, but it's been tough to find on the Newsarama site. It's been tough to find also at the Pulp Secret site, but I was able to smuggle them out, at least get you the audio. They are, though, up at pulpsecret.com, and if you check around YouTube, you can find this as well. A conversation with Rags Morales, talking about his work on Nightwing, along with Don Kramer and Peter Tomasi, and then a real treat, Larry Hama, the comic creator behind the G.I. Joe series, who really fleshed out these characters from just being action figures to giving them the three-dimensional biographies that so many fans have enjoyed for well over 20 years. It was a real treat to finally meet Larry and have a nice conversation with him. So, and the sound quality's better, so you even got that. What a bonus! So here's two quick Lucky Strike extras from the New York Comic Con. First, Rags Morales, and then Larry Hama.
And in a couple seconds with Rags Morales here on at Artist Alley at the New York Comic Con. And Rags, everybody loves you, from Identity Crisis to your signature Hawkman. It's going back to the Black Condor and wonderful stuff like Turok. I mean, you know. So what's going on right now for DC? What are you doing these days?
More people with feathers.
What do you got?
You know, Nightwing.
Outstanding.
You know, so that's what I'm doing now. For some reason, my career has gone that way. You know, Black Condor, and then you got a guy with feathers in his hair to a guy with feathers on his back, and now I got a dude with a feather in his name. It's, you know, Pete and I are just doing some ground zero work with Nightwing. We're trying to make him a viable character. He's been, I guess, disrespected. I don't want to say that. That's just a disrespectful thing to say. But, I mean, I think a lot of people feel that he's been misrepresented. And Pete is very cognizant of it. And our focus now is just try to make him cool and fun and badass and try to... get some roots back to him.
Well, like Wally West and Roy Harper, he kind of is the wish fulfillment of a generation of readers who literally have grown up with him and started reading him when he was a kid and now can appreciate him as a guy in his early 20s.
Well, absolutely. He's the fourth character created in DCU, you know, even before Wonder Woman.
Right.
You know, so he's got to have some sort of iconic legacy, and we're aware of that, and that's what we're really trying to do. You know, give him a little bit of a lot of action, a lot of... A touch of romance.
Well, and a swashbuckling guy who's happy,
exactly,
being a hero, unlike the brooding Batman, for example.
Exactly. You know? It's like me and Ethan Van Sciver. I'm that happy-go-lucky cat, and he's all broody over there.
Yeah. I'm Robert Smith, and, like, he's Paul Young or somebody.
Good 80s rock references, thank gentlemen. I like it.
So
outstanding, man.
Nice.
That's beautiful. Who are you doing a commission for now?
Troy.
Okay, and who's the drawing here that we're doing?
We're doing Solomon Grundy.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I'm trying to do a little bit of, I guess, more abstract, you know. It's the final level, so I'm trying to get there. One day I will. And I was actually sitting with some cat named Mike McGee, and looking at his portfolio, and he's very Kaluda, very Charles Vess. Even Tony Salmons is in there, you know.
Outstanding.
And I was inspired. I was like, wow, this dude should be working. And so I told him to go to D.C. who to talk to and tell him I sent him, and hopefully he won't get beat up. And so I decided to go a little bit more of a, you know, freestyle. So hopefully he'll like it. I don't know.
That's beautiful. And I also appreciated the fact that earlier, before the cameras were rolling, Walter Simonson was here and showing you some pages and covers of stuff that he's been doing with Backlash. And you know, that's the great thing. You get that generational kind of feel between the creators. And, I mean, obviously, you appreciate Walter's work. Walter appreciates you guys. And it's really cool to see, you know, the generations come together and really, you know, share secrets and really, you know, like you were pointing out the sweet spot in terms of where to place something in a panel and everything. And I know
golden area, yeah.
Yes, the golden area, yes.
Yeah, very easy to find, you know. I'll do it for you right here, anybody who wants to know. The golden area can be located from the upper left-hand corner halfway through the right side. Then you crisscross upper right-hand to the lower left-hand, and where they intersect is the golden area. And that's your browsing point. All magazine editors know that. That's where they put something to catch your eye when you're browsing through the racks.
Man, it's like getting a hitting tip from Willie Mays. You know what I'm talking about? This is great, man. Rags Morales, Art 101. You know, make sure you keep checking his books out. He's on the stands with Nightwing every month with Peter Tomasi. And thanks for spending some time with us, Rags.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Hey, kids, still at the Devil's Due booth with the godfather of G.I. Joe, the great Larry Hama. It's a pleasure to see you.
How do you do?
So tell me about a new series that you got coming out from Devil's Due called Spooks Omega Team.
It's basically the baddest dudes on Spooks have a special hit team, and they go out and they track down bad supernatural beings across the world and do them dirt.
We were just talking off camera with Tim Seeley, and he mentioned that he'll be drawing one of the arcs for you.
Yes, he will. Yeah, I'm really ramped up about that. I really like his stuff, and I've known him for a while.
G.I. Joe, I mean, what an amazing phenomenon that really doesn't seem to, you know, find any end. I mean, I go back to the full-size figure days of G.I. Joe with the hair and the kung fu grip.
Guy.
Yeah, I'm a really old guy, man. So... But, yeah, I mean, that's you must be thrilled. And is it shocking to you that you're still doing it, or is this, hey, great, let's keep going?
Yeah, I never thought, the basic thing in the toy business back then was that, you know, a toy lasted 3 years tops. So, like, you know, at the end of, you know, in the middle of year two, you know, like, all the retailers and all the wholesalers are, like, clearing their shelves, you know.
There's signature characters like Snake Eyes that everyone loves. Has there been an action figure that wasn't selling where they're like, hey, can you, you know, do us a favor and maybe come up with a cool storyline to maybe, you know, increase the profile of one of their characters?
Well, you know, but the thing is, you know, when I first saw all the actual design sketches for the G.I. Joe team, it was just a guy there in a black mask, you know, and it said commando, you know,
sure.
And, you know, a guy with a very ordinary looking, you know, outfit on it that said infantry, you know. I mean, so I had to take what I had and, you know, and run with it and go, well, you know, hey, you know, like these people have, you know, a background and lives and hopes and dreams and, you know, loyalties and fears and all these things. And that's, you know, the you know, a stack of abilities isn't a character, you know. It's how that character relates to the other characters and feels and what, you know, what they believe, you know. And that's what I try to do.
It's a long-term relationship with Hasbro. They must trust you, obviously, at this point. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you know, I haven't blabbed so far.
Oh, yeah. But I actually meant, well, that's true in terms of disclosing things. But I also story-wise and stuff, I mean, at this point in the relationship, are they pretty much, Larry, do you know, you're the man. We trust what you're doing? Or
no,
do you still?
I've said this a number of times, but... You know, the reason that there were never any previews of my stuff is that I don't know how any given story ends until I get to page 22. Had no idea. So I can't tell them how it ends because I figure if I can surprise myself, I can surprise the readers. You know, there's too many things that I read, not just comics, but like books and movies where, like, you know, after the first three pages or 5 minutes, I go, oh, well, you know, it's really the butler, or, you know what? It's the whole thing is too telegraphed. It's because, oh, I know what the ending is, and I'm working towards it. My way of writing the Joe stuff was, okay, let's get them into this terrible situation. You know, boom, they're in the situation. How do they get out? You know, then I spend the next 22 pages figuring it out.
For Spooks Omega Force, is it an ongoing? Is it going to be a monthly ongoing?
You know, first.
Yeah, so we hope so, I guess, yes. But, you know, or each arc, we'll see how each arc basically goes.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah. They make me sort of like, say oh, what a four-issue arc is, you know, and like, the best I can do, I mean, what I did with Storm Shadow, you know, Josh said, look, you had to tell us what each arc is. And I said, well, okay, in the first one, it's in Chicago. The second one, it's in Moscow. The third one is in Tokyo. And the fourth one is New York. And he said, that's all you're going to tell me? And so that's why the covers look the way they do. It's basically, you know, the city that I named in the background and an action scene in the foreground.
That's excellent, man. High-powered action stories. You can always count on them from Larry Hama, from Devil's Due. Look for Spooks Omega Force coming out and more G.I. Joe.
Multiple copies.
Okay, that does it for our coverage of Wizard World Chicago and those Lucky Strike extras from the New York Comic Con. But don't forget, next week, there's going to be an interesting interview coming up from Word Balloon. And that is, I took part in a gangbang session with a bunch of other writers talking to the creative minds behind the DVD release that comes out next week, Batman Gotham Knight. That's the 6 Japanese animated shorts that were created to help support the release of the Dark Knight film. But these are very unique and an amazing group of creative forces behind this thing. You're going to hear from Bruce Timm and Alan Burnett, two of the guys behind the wonderful Batman animated series, the Superman animated series, and of course the Justice League series as well. And it was a pleasure meeting those guys. A couple of my pals that have been on Word Balloon before, Brian Azzarello and Greg Rucka, two wonderful guys who certainly know how to write The Dark Knight. They have contributed stories as well to this very interesting 6-part collaboration, very much like the Animatrix, but also very different. And then Oscar-nominated screenwriter Josh Olson, the man who wrote the screenplay for History of Violence, that great Paradox Press graphic novel written by John Wagner. Well, Josh wrote the opening story to the Gotham Knight DVD, and was a very funny guy, plus a couple other interviews as well. That will be featured next week. In the interim, for the 4th of July weekend, our next episode, we're going to wrap up that Ed Brubaker, Matt Fraction interview. I'm sorry it's taken too long. Personal life intervened and kind of kept me from getting to edit this. And also, I wanted to get you the convention news while it was fresh. But we give you our second half of our talk with Brew and Matt, and just some fun pop culture talk, a little comic book talk mixed in there as well. But that'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Sutra saying, as always, I appreciate your support. So many nice people came up to me at the convention and said how much they enjoy the podcast. It always means a lot. And if I haven't said it recently, thanks again for listening and supporting this show. Otherwise, you can find Word Balloon at our website, wordballoon.com. You can also find us at iTunes, at newsarama.com, all the various podcast-catching sites as well. If you see us at a place where they accept reviews, and if you like the show, be happy to accept a fine critique. And, you know, even if you have anything nasty to say about the show, we'll take our lumps. We're not that proud. But as always, questions or comments, reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.